What's up? What's up? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I'm still on vacation. Rob's getting kicked out of his hotel room any minute now. Rob, literally, we were just bullshitting, and Rob's like, let's get started because I have to check out in 50 minutes or whatever. Where are you at? Where are you off to next?
I'm currently in Myrtle Beach, and then I'm coming up at the on the craziest run of all of Porch Tour, going from Nashville to doing a show after our show in the local area, then Chickamauga, then Atlanta, then I'm flying out west to do Sandpoint, Idaho, Seattle, and other places. PorchTour.com. A lot of dates coming up.
Hell yeah, dude. And then we got What are the stops again? Why do I keep forgetting that? It's Huntsville, Alabama, I think is the other one, right?
The next gig we got is in Texas. We're going to be doing Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas is first. That's right. Houston, Texas. This will be July 9th, 10th, and 11th. Natalie corrected me. I think I said June 9th, 10th, and 11th on yesterday's show, and then saw that she made that note after we were done recording. But it will be in July. My apologies to those of you who went in the past.
Yeah, we can't control July 9th through 11th. We can control weather. We can't go back in time.
We do not have control of time yet until Netanyahu's next bill passes. July 16th, Huntsville, Alabama, one night only. July 17th, 18th, 19th, Nashville, Tennessee. Love the Zanies in Nashville. Can't wait to be down there. Can't wait for all these shows. So comicdavesmith.com for those tickets. Porchtour.com for Rob's other shows. Okay. Let's talk about some stuff today, Rob. I want to talk a bunch about the Supreme Court decision on birthright citizenship, because that is that's pretty devastating. And it's, I don't know. I guess first of all, I think this does happen when I'm on my summer vacations with the families, the episodes, I think, get more philosophical for whatever reason. It's just the mindset I get put into. But it did, you know, just get me thinking about a lot of stuff, particularly just that this is so, this ruling is really, birthright citizenship is right at the heart of the broader immigration question and immigration policy. And immigration, kind of like, in a way, it touches on philosophy in a way. Like, what do you believe citizenship means? And why do you believe that this is good for a nation? And especially with, you know, in the broader context of Donald Trump's failed presidency, and here you have something that really was at the very, very heart of the core of the political reason for Donald Trump's existence, which was immigration. I mean, immigration was like, if you had to point to one issue that was the central issue of Donald Trump's rise to the presidency, it would probably be immigration. And so you have this presidency now in his second term with a Supreme Court that's really been largely picked by him. Has the most, I think the most Supreme Court, I don't know, I have to go check that, but has he picked the most Supreme Court justices of my lifetime? He's got to be up there.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's up there with the top. I mean, he's picked four justices, Amy Barrett Cohen, Kavanaugh,
Roberts.
Gorsuch. No, was Roberts, was Bush, I think.
Oh.
No? I was, but anyway,
I just felt like saying a name. Contributing.
Well, he's appointed three, just three. Okay, so I guess I named the three. We're searching. Well, it's tough. I guess that's what, when you got all three and you're searching for a fourth, and the fourth one doesn't exist, it's going to lead to a lot of us. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so okay, he's appointed three. Three of the justices on the court are appointed by him. He's, and still to lose this decision, and then just kind of like what it means for the future of the country. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot there. I know I saw Alito was really losing it. When I say that, I don't know. It's a weird way to say about a Supreme Court justice. You know, they're very dignified people, typically. When I say really losing it, his comment was, in my judgment, the court has made a mistake that will seriously affect the country's future. This is a pretty, you know, that's a pretty aggressive thing for a Supreme Court justice to say right after a decision. So any thoughts on any of it, Rob? You can take it wherever you want to, but there's a lot of different avenues to
go down. So I've read most of the recent Supreme Court cases. This one I have to, I just saw the tweet, so I'm going to have to sit down and read the whole thing. My just gut snap reaction is that they probably got the law right, but you should probably change the law. And so what I mean by that is there was precedent from some Chinaman. I don't know if you're supposed to, I don't know that that's the right nomenclature.
Almost certainly not.
Yeah, he got tossed. No, because the language is in the jurisdiction there whereof. And so, and there was already court precedent, I think standing for like 125 years, that people just born in the country are considered citizens. So from a legal standpoint, I think I understand the judgment. From a running a country standpoint, I think it's really stupid that you can come across a border, shoot across a baby, like spike it like it's a football, and now that's an American citizen with full American rights. And I think after what the Biden administration did to us of trying to get as many people over the border as they possibly can, and the amount of people that those people might give birth to, I think it's not sustainable to have you know, people just rolling into the country, trying to sneak kids being birthed here. I don't think it's a fair system. So I think from a legal standpoint, the Supreme Court potentially got it right. I'll have to dig in. But from a, hey, Congress should sit down and make an amendment on this one, I don't think it's a very, I don't think it's a good system.
I would probably even disagree with you a little bit there. Maybe not even that strongly. But I would say that I don't know that it's correct legally either. And I have seen, you know, there was a big article in, what was the journal? Oh God, I'm going to blank on this, but it was Foreign Policy, I think, something like that. But where these two scholars basically like were making this argument, this years ago, about like the original intent of the amendment, and that it's like, no, it really was applying. If you read the language carefully, it really was applying to the freed slaves, and they were saying people that are fully under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government have to be made citizens of that government, but that would not apply to people who aren't fully under U.S. So in other words, right, like if somebody is a let's say you're a tourist, you're coming to America to visit. You are under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government in the sense that, like, yeah, you can't kill someone here. You'll get arrested and go to jail for that. Or theoretically, you could be. We hope you would be. But you couldn't be tried for treason if you betrayed America because you're not an American citizen. And you could. So you're not, like, fully under U.S. jurisdiction in the way that an American is. Whereas, like, Black people were. They were fully under U.S. jurisdiction. They didn't have another country to go back to. And so, you know, but anyway, that almost is kind of immaterial to like our purposes in the bigger conversation. Because I think, as you already said, like, even if that is legally the case, well, then change the law. Then what's that? You know, there's only how many sovereign states there are in the world? What is it? 180 something, 200 something. There's only like a couple dozen, I think, who have birthright citizenship. Like, in other words, the overwhelming majority of the world just doesn't operate this way. And I think, you know, I guess me and you, well, I particularly me, but we've both of us in a way have been part of, we're like libertarian free market types, but we're a bit hawkish on immigration. And we're kind of, certainly like I've kind of carried the banner of being the anti-open borders libertarian wing of whatever, you know. I did a big debate at Soho Forum about libertarianism against Alex Nawashta from Cato, and I've been kind of talking about this for years. But I think there's an even more compelling, like, libertarian argument, if you would, to be against easy citizenship. This almost even goes beyond just the idea of, like, restricting the flow of people who want to come to America. When you're talking about citizenship, you're talking about, well, in effect, Rob, we're talking about a basket of positive rights, right? Like, you're talking about a basket of things that you're owed now, membership to the family, the fraternity of our nation. Well, why at all? Why should people be for that process being incredibly easy, even down to a point where, like, some of the contradictions in birthright citizenship are, or when I say contradictions, I mean, so, for example, the fact that you'd find yourself in a situation, Rob, where a Chinese spy is pregnant and has a baby in America. You're on the side now of arguing that that kid is a citizen. Like, okay, I'm using an extreme to paint a picture, but still, Rob, right? Like, you would literally be saying that if one of the 9/11 hijackers, you know, okay, well, they were men, but whatever. If they brought their pregnant fiance with them, 9 months pregnant, and they had the baby here, we should be making this kid a citizen, even though they were brought here with somebody in an act of war against our country. So you just, like, right immediately, you find yourself in these kind of obvious contradictions on, like, the national interest. Like, this clearly isn't in a nation's interest to do immigration this way. But, I mean, even more so, like, I guess, okay, there's kind of two different thoughts there. But so on one hand, the from the libertarian case, or from the idea of believing in national sovereignty at all, or what's best for the country, this just seems like kind of inherent madness. Like, this is crazy. This is, why would you have a system set up to say that if people come into your country illegally, but they're pregnant, or but they have kids in your country, their kids are automatically not only legally allowed in the country, but enshrined with all of the rights that, again, just to be very clear on the libertarian side, positive rights here. So
it's particularly egregious also if the basis for it is an illegal action. So, right, I can't think of too many other examples of that, but if you're coming into the country illegally to birth a kid, and now the kid is considered a full citizen, it kind of rewards you for the illegal activity that you did. And if you just think it, like, right, in like a more smaller scale, imagine me, you, a bunch of other people went out west in a time that you could just go out west, and we founded a village and we work our asses off and we get the village working. And for a period of time, people can show up and work and they're contributing to the village. You get the village up and running. We got some wealth there. And then we decide, you know what? No new people can come in. And we agree on that rule. I mean, it's nonsensical that someone could sneak in, birth a kid, and then you would go, well, that kid's now considered a resident of this. It just doesn't make sense.
The same legal body would make both rules. That the same legal body would make the rule that you're not allowed to come, and then also make the rule that if you break that rule and you get in here and have a kid, you're good. And oh, by the way, then through chain migration, in fact, you might all be able to stay. It's like, it's, yes, the idea that the same person is going to make both of those rules. You know, it's like me as a property owner setting a rule that no one else except my family is allowed to come in my house. But if you do break into my house and you get into the bathroom, you win a prize. Yes, it's madness. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And just to, on the point of what I was saying before, just to, like, spell that out, for when I'm saying citizenship is positive rights, what I just mean by, to maybe, like, caveat this on philosophical, like, libertarian grounds or something like that, I, when you say that, well, you broke the law to come here, look, there might be a scenario in which I would go, yeah, but you're making an appeal to the law, and that's not necessarily what's right and what's wrong. I mean, there's laws of the land that are immoral, and there have been, you know, slavery was the law of the land at one point, and, like, horrible things. So, like, I wouldn't say, like, the difference between, like, a slave, you know, running free, that might be in violation of the law, but it's also not in violation of the moral law, and it's not it's not, like, you don't have a right to be enslaving that person to begin with. But with immigration, it's like, well, you don't really have a right to enter a country. Like, you don't have a right, as I've been saying for years, you don't have a right to enter a piece of property that you do not own, that you were not invited onto. And so, like, it's, you have a law that, in my opinion, is consistent with what you're allowed to do, have some limit on how many people are coming here, and particularly a limit on citizenship. But when I say, so just to be clear here, in other words, no matter who's here, Rob, in our country, even if they don't have citizenship, even if they don't have temporary residence status, if somebody's here visiting for a week from, you know, wherever, from Poland, they come here on vacation or something like that, me and you and almost all same people, we still believe that all of their rights should be protected. Negative rights, meaning, right? Like, we don't believe that they can be stabbed or raped or beat up or imprisoned or something like that. It's like, no, they still have rights. They're a human being. It doesn't, whether they're we recognize very quickly, right, the difference between the negative rights and the positive rights. Just to be clear, when I say this is like libertarian terminology, I guess, or classical liberal terminology, negative rights meaning essentially nothing that is required from other people. So this is all the most basic rights that we think like natural rights, freedom of speech, freedom of whatever, you know, freedom of movement, not onto property that you don't own, that you're not invited onto, but freedom of movement to property that you are invited onto or that you do own or that whatever. Basic human rights, the right to life, the right, like all of these things. We'd all recognize that the person from Poland has all of those rights. What don't they have? Well, they can't vote in our elections. You know, I mean, they don't get the extra stuff that you get from being a citizen. So when we're talking about citizenship, we're not talking about protecting like your right to life or something like that. We're talking about like your the kind of like extra what libertarians wouldn't consider rights, but we would consider kind of like, I don't know, privileges or something like that. And so you're not, when you get into that, you're not talking about like whether we should be protecting people's rights. You're saying, should we be giving stuff out? Should we be rewarding other people? And in many cases, for doing illegal things, for doing things the wrong way. I guess my point is that there's really no coherent case for that. There's no coherent case for why we should be giving citizenship out to the world. And, you know, it does really, Rob, I mean, it gets right to the kind of art of like, so what does it even mean to be an American citizen? What does it mean? In what ways are we actually a nation moving forward? And I think that's a really profound question that we really don't have an obvious answer to right now.
Well, I guess if you can sneak yourself in and try and steal from this free goods apparatus, then that's what it means to be American now, is make sure that you're in the minority class, that you can group together, complain the loudest, and get yourself some nice social benefits.
Well, that's right. And that there's, you know, when you add into that the racial and ethnic kind of balkanization, you know, when you add it, like, because that's the reality of all this stuff. Like, that's the effect of this policy, is that we're now going to live in a country where, I mean, it's been a little while since I've looked at these projections, but I'm pretty sure if you look at it, they're still projecting that by 2050, we're a minority country, a majority minority country. So in other words, meaning white people are less than 50%, and therefore there is no like majority.
So you're saying in 2050, the country will fail?
Well, no, I mean, if you really look at the way it works, Rob, it'll be a few years, you know. Well, look, I'm not saying there's this weird dynamic, right? And this has been going on my entire life. And then it really accelerated with wokeism, let's say 2016 through 2022, insane wokeism. And then is now kind of exploded, and there's been a backlash, and, you know, the whole dynamics have kind of been thrown up in the air now. But essentially, right, Rob, it's a matter of government policy. It's an intentional decision made by policymakers to have the immigration system that we've had for the last 50 years. And that has transformed this country from a country that was, and had always been for most of its history, about the demographics in America in 1960 were about 90% white, 9% black, 1% other. That was America. This is what America looked like. And this was true for large periods of time, you know, in America, or the demographics were somewhat like that, where you had essentially the country was biracial. There were two racial groups. The overwhelming majority were white. Around 10%, a little less than 10% were black. Blacks were not treated great. That was a pretty big theme in America. We fought a war over it. We then had, 100 years later, major national legislation over it. There was a decision made to transform the country. And now we're going to enter a country where we are truly a multiracial society, where it's not that we're not biracial. There's not one majority group and one minority group. And there's not even just two groups, and there's no clear majority. There's just a ton of different groups, and they're all existing under this system, Rob, as you pointed out, which essentially in effect is like a big scheme to try to grab as many of your fellow countrymen's resources for yourself and your own group. Frederick Bastiat had a line in The Law. I'll butcher this a little bit. It was beautiful the way he wrote it. He said, the state is the great fiction by which every man attempts to live at the expense of his neighbor. And that is the bigger government grows. And especially when these things, what I was getting at before when I was talking about wokeism, is that there was resistance, especially with Donald Trump running in 2016, to this. It was like kind of for the first time, this became like a major in the forefront political issue that conservatives in America, even if they wouldn't say it out loud, maybe they would say, I don't mind immigration, but I don't like illegal immigration or something like that. But it was very clear that there was a recognition of this change and a rejection of it. They don't like the fact that we're being flooded with immigration from primarily Latino countries. But regardless, there was major pushback against this. And this pushback was met with tremendous alarmism from the left, liberals and the leftists. You know, you're a Nazi. You're a Nazi if you want to build a wall. You're a Nazi if you believe in mass deportations. Oh, I got to say here, one of the fundamental problems that you've always had here, if I'm just calling it like I see it, and I've been saying this for a lot of years, and I remember, Rob, you probably do too, but I remember this saying around 10 years ago to you and getting in a lot of trouble for it at the time. Now you can kind of say it more comfortably. But there's just a difference. And this is one of the problems with the way liberals scream racist, because it becomes this very, very broad term that can encompass almost any minor infraction. But the bottom line is that there's a major difference between, like, look, the Nazis are known as the Nazis because of a genocide, right? There's a big difference between wanting to build a wall and wanting to genocide a group of people. There's a big difference between not wanting your country to change drastically, demographically, and wishing to oppress a minority of people, wishing to exploit a group of people, or in the worst case scenario, to exterminate a group of people. That's just fundamentally different. And to try to convince people that you're a Nazi for looking at something like the demographic changes in America and going, why are we doing this? Like, why? So whose benefit is this? Why? Let's just say everything works out great and it's fine. Like, okay, but why roll the dice this way? You know, human beings, wherever you stand on racism, which generally I would think me and you would be against it, broadly speaking, but wherever you stand on that, you're living in a state of ignorance that is like the absolute height of naivete to not notice that tribalism and sectarianism is the way of the world. It's the way that human beings think. It's the way that human beings act. It's the way that human beings see themselves as part of a broader group. You know, people identify with their group. Even when we're doing really stupid things that we all know are meaningless, human beings like to get into a stadium of other people and divide into who roots for the red team and who roots it for the blue team, and then celebrate when their team wins. Even when we know it's just getting a ball over a line and it doesn't mean anything, there's no real stakes here, that's just fun for us. It's the way human beings are wired. And so, look, the thing about it is this, Rob. We've fundamentally, in the two of our lifetimes, America has gone from being a nation to being something that I'm not sure you can call a nation anymore. And I don't know where that goes exactly. But we don't even watch the same shows or listen to the same music or go to the same movies. You know, at least in the 90s, say whatever you will, we had a lot of problems, but at least we did have a common culture to some degree. It's hard to overstate how much we don't have that already in America, and it's really hard to see that coming back. So what does this mean? It's just, hey, American citizenship is for anyone who can come take it, and we'll just all keep looting this thing until it collapses, does seem like the default direction right now.
Well, in my opinion, what makes someone quintessentially an American is if you want to move to this country because you want to live a better life and you want to work hard towards that better life and you want your kids to live a better life. And if that's what you're looking to do when you come here, to me, you know, that's the American spirit. But if you're here because we got some giant socialized system and you think it's a easier lifestyle because of all the government benefits, then you're just you're part of the problem there. And I also think that I also think it's and we don't have this in this country, but I think that you should have a right of affiliation to affiliate with whoever you would like to, which means if you have a company and you want to hire all men, it's very hard to build a company. You want to hire all your friends from your frat, you should be allowed to do that. If you want to go live out in an area and be like, hey, these are the only people that I want to live with, you should also be allowed to do that. And I think it would be great if there was racist USA and I knew where I didn't want to go. I think that'd be great. And if all the racists could get together and feel really positive about them building their racist society and how great it would be, I think that they would be more community oriented and probably on a daily basis nicer to their neighbors. And I think that from a spiritual standpoint, that would be better for those individuals. And I think on a country level, you know, I don't think it's fair that some people like a certain version of America and a different one is being imposed on them because of other people that are more obsessed with socialism and multiculturalism and all this other stuff. And then on a local level, you don't have the right to, I put it positively, the right of positive affiliation to decide I don't want to hire these people or I don't want to live with these people. And so I just don't see that as a fair or working system.
Yeah. Well, that's a really great point. I think, you know, kind of what you're getting at there, because this really is the reason why that's such an important point, is that this is one of the issues Americans actually really care about, you know, and for good reason, because this is their country. Like, this is, I mean, Rob, it's like almost every poll that I've seen, I mean, you can always find exceptions with polls, but this one is actually pretty tough to find. It's the money and immigration. This is like what through the 2024 election, through Trump's first and second year of this administration, this is what people like care about. Like the fact that everything is so damn unaffordable, and the fact that the mass migration of the last few years is something we, you know, this is an issue, like as we've talked about, super majorities of the American people agree on stricter immigration, even perhaps mass deportations. I'm not sure where the numbers on that are at the moment. But, you know, Donald Trump, obviously, and in some way we can look at this now, right? 10 years of Donald Trump running for president, you know, or being president, 2016 to 2026. And this is where, I guess, perhaps, Rob, right, like, people get caught in the partisanship of politics, you know, you get caught in the left versus right, and this is my team and that's their team. And we try at least to zoom out more and kind of look at the bigger picture and criticize both sides. But it, so I'm not saying Donald Trump gets all the blame for this, but I am just making more of like a broad comment on the system and what the system has delivered for the American people. If you really think about it, Rob, the American people have stood up and said they want immigration restrictions over the last 10 years. And over the last 10 years, now this is on Biden, not on Trump, perhaps, but what they've gotten is the biggest pouring, the biggest migration period in modern history. So it's like there is such a disconnect between what the people are very clearly saying they want and what is being delivered to them from the elites. And that is like it's again, I know I've said this before, but there is something. Look, there's nothing worse a government can do than launch a war. But there's no more profound betrayal than to replace your own people. You know, like, I mean, this is more apparent. It's more obvious when you look at an example like Ireland, you know, which, by the way, is like a people who never oppressed anyone. Like the Irish just took it. Like their entire existence was just them being oppressed by others. But if you start importing, you know, people from Somalia into Ireland, and I know people, it's almost like Americans, because of political correctness and even like the precursor of wokeism, just because of our liberal, we grew up in the post-war, post-civil rights world that we live in. Like when you talk like this, people do still get, you know, fidgety. People get almost like there's just a little bit of an allergy to having discussions like this. It would be very easy for people if you flipped the racial situations. If you went, hey, we're importing a whole bunch of Irish and Scottish into Haiti, what does that mean for the future of Haiti? It'd be very easy for people to say, hey, you're kind of erasing a people and a culture here. But when it's happening to Ireland, like that's the same thing, man. And if you just import then Irish people just cease to exist and that goes away in the future. Now, you could sit here and say, hey, who cares about that? And look, I'm a bit of a cosmopolitan myself. I'm a Jew from New York City. I'm not like a, you know, I don't have like strong feelings about interracial marriage or things like that. If people choose to almost like kind of breed themselves out of one culture or racial group and into another one, I don't know. People fall in love with who they fall in love with and have, you know, mazel tov. I don't know. I wish everybody the best. But there is something different when you're talking about against the will of a group, this being done to them. You know what I'm saying? Like where there's no reason that the government policy has to be this. The people are saying they don't want it to be this. And you're making it this way anyway. You know, it reminds me, I know I've brought this up before because I always found this to be, in fact, you were with me. I don't remember where we were. We were on the road somewhere in one of our major, one of our many, travelings, doing comedy shows. And I was reading about this in the hotel room, but I remember talking to you about when I was reading the King Crane Commission and their recommendation about Israel-Palestine. And it was just so crazy to read because it's like, I mean, the King Crane Commission is, I want to say it was like in 1919, maybe, right? I think it was before the Paris Peace Accord, whatever. But it's at the end of World War One, and they're going out there, and there were these plans already. I think this was like the year after, well, I guess the Balfour Declaration was in 1917, if I'm remembering correctly. So it's like a couple years after the Balfour Declaration. And they're like, okay, look, you got these plans to make a Jewish state here in Palestine. Like, this is not going to work. Just go through. And they're just like, look, here's the facts on the ground. This is not going to work, man. This is going to result in like 100 years of bloodshed if you try to do this. And it's crazy. Like looking back at it, you're kind of like, oh yeah, well, yes, that's exactly what it resulted in. I mean, what are the fundamentals on the ground here? Okay, there is an indigenous population here who are very attached to this land, and they do not want to give it up. And they're not Jewish. They don't want to make this a Jewish state. So how are you going to do that? Well, the only way you're going to do that is by an incredible use of force, right? You're going to need transfer of human beings out of this land. And this is going to lead to conflict and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So in a similar way, you just go, so what, just looking at the facts on the ground here, you go, so you're just going to have a society that is a multiracial melting pot that will be unified in their belief in anti-racism or something like that. Because that's what's gonna unify us, and this will exist under the biggest government in the history of the world, the biggest welfare state, warfare state that's ever been created. Those fundamentals don't look sound, Rob.
This is what I hate about this. You know, I live in New York and the Connecticut, but you know, I'm a comic from New York and I hang out with everybody. And if you ask me where's the ideal location to live, it's a multicultural, gay, whatever, just everyone loves freedom and there's no socialism. If that was the thing that bound us, you give me a room full of every different shade of libertarian who wants to end the Fed and wants to be left the fuck alone and wants to live in an area where there is no government that's bothering you, I don't care what the race, gender, none of that shit matters to me. But, you know, I do kind of feel like I'm going to go with a more localized environment. But, like, I've worked in offices that are a very dude environment, what you might call, like, a frat house type place. And then you get women, and they're like, listen, I just want to be able to work here. But that's not true, because once you're in the office, we can't behave the same way. You don't want us behaving the same way. So you both want us to be there, and then you actually want it to be the environment that you like. It's not like you just wanted to step into the environment the way it was and that you're going to be okay with the way that it is. And, you know, I think it's like the liberals, they want the environment of just all inclusiveness with the socialism, and they're pretending like they're not imposing that onto everybody else. And I also just, there's a great bit by John Panette. If you never heard it, he's out in France. He's sick of eating French food. And then he finds out that you can literally just drive to Italy from France. And it's about him eating Italian food. It's an amazing bit. But, like, isn't it amazing to be able to just drive somewhere and be in an entirely different area with entirely different people? Like, I kind of love when you go to Boston and you're hearing people talk Boston, that's fun. You go down to Texas and they're fucking Texas, that's fun. Like, there's something to allowing an area to be the place that it is, which includes if we all got up and moved to Japan and started acting like filthy Americans, where apparently they got a nicer culture. I've heard you can leave a wallet on a train and someone will return it to you. I've never been there. That might be Japanese propaganda. I don't know. But I'm just saying, I'm a loudmouth. I can imagine if you took 100 of me and you put in some small Japanese village, they'd be like, what the hell are these Yankees doing here? This is obnoxious and I don't like this. And they should be allowed to say that. You know, so I just think it's like it's a fake, like, oh, we're just being nice, but it is an imposition on other people of what your preference is across the entire country.
No, I mean, I think that's right. And I think that there's an organic kind of natural ebb and flow to these things when you let the market work and you just let people make the decisions that they want to make. And, you know, these things do. They do resolve themselves in that, like, Rob, it's all like comes down to property rights in the same way, right? It's like they own that, and so they don't have to let you in, and they can do their thing, and then you can do your thing, and different cultures can like emerge. What ends up happening is that through this kind of fiat top-down government policy approach, you end up crushing a lot of those differences. And then weirdly, in the name of like neoliberal diversity or something like that, it's like in the name of like diversity, we should make all of our differences, we should extinguish all of our differences and all be the same. And they're like, yeah, I completely agree with you. I think what's cool is that you can go to France and visit France and go have a baguette and see the Eiffel Tower and see Parisian culture or whatever, you know, and like, and then you can go to Italy and it's a whole different thing there. And then you can, right, like, I don't think all of us, I don't know, like in some weird way, there's like, isn't that true diversity and not, you know, all of us kind of fitting one mold that will all look exactly the same, is uniformity in some way. So I, you know, look, the bottom line with all of this is that it's like the American people are being handed something that they really don't want. It's incoherent. It doesn't make any sense. And it's clearly not good for the country. And yet there still seems to be no mechanism by which to stop it. So, you know, it does seem to me like this is going to have to be, you know, this is going to have to be a big project if any, and I don't even know if conservatism is the right way to put it, but any type of force that's going to be challenging this trajectory is going to have to be fighting against. It's almost like I think I saw someone posted something on Twitter about it, that it was like, this was going to have to almost be like the pro-life movement for right-wingers now, where it's like, this is your Roe versus Wade decision, and now you got to go
Or in the meantime, and I will say that this is a negative consequence of this policy. I've said, hey, listen, I'd be okay with let's do a one-time amnesty for people who are in the country illegally, but your kids can never become citizens, and there's you're not allowed any social benefits, and you can either choose to take that agreement or you can leave. And I think that that would be a more practical solution. We're living in, let's say, I have to read through the Supreme Court case. What you said up front about made sense to me. I got to dig in. But let's just say currently the law is that they're saying, okay, birthright citizenship's the way it works. They're not even necessarily saying that they agree with it morally. They're just saying that that's right. What the law is here. Well, now it does kind of force the hand of the government to be like, well, then we really have to kick everyone out who came in illegally before they have kids. And so, you know, you're kind of putting the onus on Trump to do the thing you don't really want him to do and is not as nice, because the alternative is everyone that's snuck in under Biden can basically have anchor babies stick around and have kids that are citizens forever. And so, you know, that is the, I guess, immediate corrective measure is escalating deportations before people are having kids. But it is kind of the nastier you know, less agreeable outcome.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's a good point. It certainly does put pressure to do something about it if it's, you know, but there's, you know, it's just, I think there's, and I think this is happening already, like kind of inevitably, and it's not always in the most productive ways, but there is something where the parameters around the conversation, I think a lot of the taboos have kind of been shattered. You know, like I was saying to you, like, I remember talking about some of this stuff like 10 years ago. And I remember trying to explain on Essie Cup show to Essie Cup and Andy Levy. And I remember thinking that I was making a lot of sense. And then looking up at their faces, and both of them were just like horrified with me. Where I was just like, I was basically trying to say, and I was not as much of an immigration restrictionist then as I am now, but I was just kind of trying to make the argument to them that, like, if somebody let somebody opposing America not being a majority white country doesn't make them a Nazi. Like, there's a difference between that. You know, like I was just like, you know, there's a difference between just being like, hey, America was always a majority white country, I kind of like it staying that way, and being like, I want to exterminate this group of people. Like, there's a big gap there. No, you know, and like, people like, what do you even mean? Like, it, you know, it just seemed like they, and I like both of them, you know, personally, but they both just, you know, I don't know. It wasn't resonating with them. But I mean, again, I think that we're very trapped still today. It's getting better, but we're very trapped about this conversation, about even having honest conversations when it comes to race. It's such a like sensitive issue. But we have racial problems in America. And it seems like, dude, like essentially right now, look, the original minority group in America. So whatever you're gonna say about Native Americans, let's just skip that for a second. But Native Americans, I mean, there's a different relationship there between settlers and who came over and colonized the place. But Black people were shipped in here and enslaved in America. It's fairly well known. It's been discussed quite a bit, Rob. I don't know if you've seen. They made a documentary on it. We have slavery in this country. We don't have it anymore. To this day, we have in no meaningful way solved the problem. It's like really bad, and it just doesn't come up that much. We just all kind of accept it. Like, there are major, major race relations problems, major problems in the Black community. I mean, dude, it's hard to describe this, Rob. The United States of America has basically our entire lives consisted of like what you would call pockets of third world countries, essentially. Like, dude, you go to Camden, you go to Newark, you know, you go to parts of Baltimore, dude, you go to parts of the south side of Chicago, you are not in the United States of America anymore. And when I say that, I mean, like, obviously not legally, you're still within the jurisdiction. I mean, like, you're not in the country that you fucking live in, that you grew up in. You're in a different country that is a major, major goddamn problem, dude. And where you, there's, we all know this, that there's portions of every single city in this country where we just cannot go. You can't go there. You'll get killed, dude. Are you crazy? And the kids who grow up there, not growing up in the same world as my kids are growing up, but in terms of like everything, just everything, every little inch of opportunity and development and there, you know, like, so I remember, I know I used the example with you before, Rob, because I tell you, but we used to, me and Jay, we used to do gigs in Philly all the time when we were young comics. And we were like in our 20s and go out and do a gig in Philly for like $50 or whatever, you know, like make enough money to drive home. And we used to drive through Camden at like 3 a.m. We were coming from Philly, going back to the to New York City. And we would do it just for the like thrill of it. It's like crazy, dude. It's crazy to drive through Camden at 3 a.m. And I remember, dude, you see shit, like, you know, when you really go into the hood, you see this shit like 3-year-olds out at 3 a.m. with no shoes on. Just there. There's no adult attending to him. Just a kid younger than my boy, you know, at the time. This kid is just totally fucked. Just in every goddamn conceivable way. Just totally screwed. I mean, my God. He's, you know, it's like, what you think, by the 8th grade, we're going to start comparing him to my boy and see where they're both at developmentally? This kid's got nothing. No one's even talking to him. You know what I mean? He doesn't have shoes on his feet. He's not. And we just kind of don't talk about it that much, man. I don't know. Government throws a lot of your taxpayer money at it. It's not solving any of the problems. Yeah, pretty much. We all kind of know in some way that we've created a situation that is not solving this. It's a loop. They're in it. People are making money off of it. And that's it. And like, so anyway, I'm just making the point, like, we haven't solved that problem. We still live in a segregated country. I mean, it's not segregated by law in the same way. It's segregated by economics more, Rob. This is, you know, we all essentially, you know, as I remember talking about when the late Scott Adams said that thing about how his advice was to move away from Black people. Just don't interact with Black people. Move away from them. Don't live in their neighborhoods. Don't, you know. And I remember the second I heard that, being like, damn, that's fucking harsh. Like, what a fucked up thing to say. And then I'm like, I mean, I did it. But don't, that's what you do. You do it. You don't say it out loud. Now, I'm not saying I consciously moved away from Black people. I'm just saying that I happened to move into a wealthy, safe town, and it's 99% white. And that's, you know, that's really it. My demonstrated preference or whatever, Rob, is that just the most important priority to me is that my kids are in a safe area. And that means I got to just be away from all those problems I talked about before. Now, there are Black people who live in my neighborhood and they're great, great people, you know, but it's just like, anyway, I guess the broader point I'm just making is that we have this like enormous race problem in America. We can't even begin to talk about it because even just me having this conversation, even though it's not what it was 10 years ago, is still almost like radioactive, you know? And so then, as is always the dynamic with these things, Rob, if people like us won't have this conversation, you leave it to the only people willing to have it, who are usually going to not handle it in the most mature, compassionate way. But You know, again, the point is we haven't solved the original race problem in America, let alone to just throw in more cultures and more races and more mixes and then have this kind of, like I said, this very naive neoliberal assumption that like, no, that'll all work out well because diversity is our strength and stuff. You know, look around the world. Tribes never war with each other. They just enjoy their, you know, diversity as their strength. But you better not appropriate any other culture or whatever, you know, whatever dumb shit they're saying these days is.
On the point of, which was kind of more your starting point than ending point of white people that aren't Nazis if they just don't want immigration. Unlike, you know, just a more personal, like I remember, you know, we used to work at LOL every night and then there was a changing of the guard. And then I was the one white guy there in a room full of black dudes. And I wouldn't advocate that those guys couldn't work that club, but I can tell you it was less fun hanging out there because I was kind of the odd man out. And I find sometimes I get into an Uber, very rarely, it's some old Brooklyn guy, and we have the best conversation for 10 minutes. More often than not, I get into an Uber, the guy doesn't speak English, and I'm listening to him holler on his phone, and it's kind of an awkward car ride. And so I'm a little bit deprived of the nice conversation. I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut. I go to my gym now. I'm like the one white dude there. It's all Hispanic. I don't interact with a single person in the gym. Now, I'm not advocating in any sense the way, like, we got to kick all these people out of the country. I don't feel that way. I'm just saying, like, I am deprived of the experience of just, like, being around people that are, you know, I guess I more organically have nice conversations with. But the idea of, like, if you lived in an area and you kind of like being around who you like to be around and you want to preserve that because it's just a better experience for you than having a changing landscape or the odd man out. I mean, you can go with any demographic here. If you're a completely Dominican neighborhood and then a bunch of whites move in, you might be like, ah, shit, I can't afford to live here anymore. And all my friends had to move out. It's a different experience than what it was before. And so just the idea that someone's looking to preserve, like, hey, I kind of like who I'm affiliated with here and I like who I'm hanging out with and looking to preserve that, like, that's racist. It's just kind of like tangible of the human experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think about it a lot as I was just, you know, using the example of having kids, because it's just, you know, it's been a pretty big force in my life for the last 7.5 years or so that I got these kids. They make a lot of noise. It's impossible to forget.
And they spread diseases.
Oh my God, do you get every virus under the sun? That's not, but you know, they give you a lot of joy and meaning and stuff like that too. But you know, like when you have little kids, it's made me very aware of like the childhood that I'm giving them compared to the childhood I had. And then particularly aware of just the childhoods that other kids have. And I'm more animated and motivated by the idea of giving my kids a good life than anything else. I mean, that's my biggest thing. And as you do that, you just become aware of what it takes to do that and what's necessary. You're very aware of how unfair it is that your kids get that and other kids don't. But that's not enough to make me not want to give it to them. But part of what you need to give it to them is like right away, you're like, okay, well, they have to be in a really good school. They have to be in a really good neighborhood. They have to be in a really good this. And how do you keep that? Well, there's got to be barriers to entry. It's got to cost money. There's got to be other like-minded parents who have, you know, means as well. And, you know, like, and so you almost have to, in order to protect something, you have to like create these barriers to entry. Like in order, if you have a really beautiful house, you can't just let anybody come party in it. You got to protect who can come in and who can't come in. And in a way that sucks, in a way there's a nice, you know, like a, it's like lefty hippie shit, Rob. Like sometimes it sounds nice. You know, it's like when you listen to that, what's the John Lennon song? What's the Imagine, right? Where it's like it's the lyrics of like a lefty hippie perspective, but as soon as if you just like break them down, you realize he's describing hell, like very quickly. Like what is it? It's the lyrics are like, imagine there's no. Oh God, I almost got to pull these up right now, Rob, because it's.
All
just
right, like they're knocking on my door, and I got to pack up some gear, so I'll let you, John Lennon.
Okay,
here, out.
I'll finish.
All right, later, dudes. Porchstore.com, Run Your Mouth Podcast. Peace.
Porchstore, Rob Burns. Here's the lyrics to Imagine. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Like, look, so far, you're even almost like, okay, so there's no heaven, there's no hell. Like, okay, that's kind of dark, but like, even if you are an atheist and you're kind of a, there's something kind of nihilistic about that. But like, okay, whatever, fine, there's no heaven or no hell, people aren't being punished. Now there's no nations, there's no, okay. Imagine all the people living life in peace. All right, that part sounds nice. Doesn't seem like human nature so much, but it does sound nice. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Here's the next line. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. You know. So anyway, my point is just that it's like, look, sometimes these things kind of sound nice, but like, what would actually happen in the world if you tore down all of the structures, all of everything, and then said, now let's just hope everyone gets along? You're like, oh, okay, but what you're describing here is that, what do you mean no possessions? Well, people need possessions. What do you mean no hunger? People get hungry. You know what they do if they have no possessions and no food? They fucking try to kill people. They try to kill whoever's got it so they can take it from them. That's what it's a recipe for. And in a similar sense, you know, like I said, being a parent, having these little kids, you get like an expensive house, you put them in an expensive school, you put them in an expensive thing. On some level, of course, dude, like we're all, because this type of leftism is just infantile childishness, all of us have a little bit of it in us. All of, on some level, I go, I wish all the kids could get this childhood that I'm giving to my kids. That sure would be nice. But then in a very practical sense, I also go, okay, but I know that if you move to a town where there's not high property taxes, where the school, there's not expensive private schools, where they're, like if you take away all the barriers to entry, I have the burden of being an adult and knowing damn well that the result of that will not be that all of the children get my kids' childhood. The result will be that my kids now don't get it either. Right? And that's just a fact. That's just a fact. Like, it's not like, oh, if I took my kids right now and I said, I'm gonna move to the hood in Baltimore and put them in the local public school so that they get the exact same childhood as all those kids, then they just get their shitty childhood. I have no way of moving all of those kids from Baltimore into, you know what I'm saying? And giving them all two parents who love them and the means to do, I don't have. And so anyway, the connection to America is just, it's the same thing with that. If everybody's allowed into your club, then membership to your club is meaningless and valueless. It's a pretty big problem when you do that with a whole nation. All right, that's going to be our show for today. Make sure to go see Rob on the road, porchtour.com, and then come see us together, of course, if you can, comicdavesmith.com, Houston, Texas, Huntsville, Alabama, Nashville, Tennessee, all coming up in the next few weeks. All right, see some of you guys there. Peace.